Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. This is the last Wednesday night talk of the 2008 Rains Retreat. Obviously the time just passed very fast. And hopefully that during this retreat period that you all manage to let go of a little bit more. Remember what Ajahn Chah used to say, we don't meditate for gaining things, for attaining things, for having more, what I call like Boy Scout badges on your robe. You meditate to actually to let go of things, to disappear more, to have less attachments, to have less craving, to have more peace, more stillness, more freedom. So we go closer to the goal of Nibbana, which is, you know, the ultimate freedom, the cessation of everything. And on this path you come across many obstacles, many difficulties. Obviously expectations is one of them. Frustrations which are connected to expectations are number two. Whatever you expect, you're asking for trouble because it will never fulfill your dreams. And instead we have no expectations, we have no desires, we let go, we're still, we're content, we're allowing ourselves to be at peace with whatever we experience or with whatever we have to do. It's a way of not controlling, and because we don't control, that thing which does the controlling is being starved of its nutriment. The sense of self will only grow and become strong if you feed it with this controlling, with this wanting, with playing around in that world where you can sort of influence things, or you think you can influence things. Which is why that those astha words, the outflowings of the mind, those outflowings of the mind which want to control, to influence, to own, even your own body and your own practice of meditation, that outflowing is the enemy, because that feeds a sense of self, the sense of ego. Remember, we talk about non-self, it's not something which is just seen with a flash of insight and now you are free. What you're actually seeing there is this entity which is built up from causes, which is fed by these nutriments. And this is one of the main nutriments which feeds the sense of self, the ability to control, to manipulate, to do, to decide, to choose. And if you don't see that clearly, you can build up a sense of self so strongly that you can't let go, that you can't abandon things. It's one of the suttas which struck me when I read it from the Buddha. I think it's in the Anguttara Nikaya, it could be the Sangyutta, but it doesn't really matter, it's in there somewhere, where it said that without abandoning the three fetters of Sakkaya Ditti, especially the delusion of a self, without abandoning that, you can never abandon sensory desire and ill will. Now, you can't just decide, oh, I am going to not get angry and get negative at people. You can't do that. It's part of having a self, is you get negative and you get angry and upset. It's also part of having a self that you crave for things and want things, especially in the sensory world. And understanding that was really quite profound when I realized that instead of always trying to let go of things, it's good to let go of things, it's good to sort of restrain the senses, it's good to see if you can suppress your anger, but you'll never be able to succeed totally. You'll never be able to succeed suppressing your sensory desires for food, for movies, for music, or whatever else you get into, for coffee. You'll never be able to stop that, but you can suppress it, you can restrain it, to give you the opportunity to see where it all comes from, the sense of self. And by overcoming that sense of self, seeing the sense of the self, what it actually is, you know, this whole process which we assume to be an entity, a mere mind, to see how it's fed, where it comes from, this is really what we have to do. And when a teacher comes along and says, this is what that sense of self really is, this is what feeds it, the doer, the controller, the maker, the chooser, the owner, that's what feeds it. It'll become quite clear once you see the whole path and why we're doing this, why it is important to let go, to do little, especially when you're meditating, to actually to follow the rules, which is not you doing it, you're just doing your duties. It's not your decision. You're a monk. This is what a monk does. This, you're a nun. This is what a nun does. An anagarika is what an anagarika does. He drives a car. He cooks a lunch. So this is just what you do. You let go of your choice. You let go of your controlling. You let go of this me inside, which wants to do it its way. And by doing that, you are lessening the solidity of the sense of self. And when you lessen its solidity, you find it's easier to see exactly what the self is. Your cravings, your negativity, your ill will lessens because the source of it is being overcome. Just like with a disease, you don't use band-aid solutions. You go to the cause of the disease, the virus or the imbalance in your body or whatever is your lifestyle. You get to the cause of that disease, and once you find the cause, you attend to the cause, and then the disease vanishes. The diseases are the symptoms. You want to go to the heart of this, which is the illusion of a self. Well, understanding this, the whole path becomes quite clear. You know, why in our teaching this way? Why we have a vinaya? Why we have a core what? You know, the monastic rules. Why we have these things is because it gives you a path to let go. Many years ago when an American anagarika in Thailand was arguing with me, so why do we need all these rules? These rules of vinaya, they're too old, we should adapt to the modern times. All these rules of Thai customs, you know, we should sort of, we're Westerners in this monastery, Wat Banana Chart, why do we have to do it the Thai way? And even then I gave him a very solid argument why. He said, because by doing it that way, not your way, but their way, it's much easier to let go of your sense of self and ego. And he actually couldn't argue with that. He understood why we do these things. It's an idea, it's a way, a means, a tool, a vehicle of being able to let go more and more and more. In the chant which we just did, the Anatta Lakkhana Sutta. And you know that these talks, you know, just what happened just recently is usually what comes out in the talk. And the last words we said in that beautiful chant of the Anatta Lakkhana Sutta about the five monks, that they're Anupadaya Chittani, it's like Anupadaya Asawahi Chittani Vimuching Zuti, that their minds were freed from these outflowings through non-attaching or non-fuel, anupadaya. And so often you see that in these the suttas, when a person became enlightened, they became enlightened because their mind was freed through basically cutting off the attachments. And why? What do you mean the mind became freed by cutting off the attachments? Attachments to what? And it should become quite clear to you, this was at the end of the Anatta Lakkhana Sutta, what went before, to see that the Buddha was arguing backwards and forwards, comprehensively, this way and that way, that the five khandhas, which make up the human being, there's nothing beyond those five khandhas for the human mind and body, that none of these can be taken as a me, mine or a self. They can't be controlled. If they could be controlled, you could say to your body, to your feelings, to your perception, to your will, to your consciousness. Oh, may my consciousness be like this. Oh, may my will be like this. Oh, may my meditation be like this. How many of you have been trying to get your meditation just as you want for the last 3 months? Hasn't it clicked yet, what the Buddha just said in the Anatta Lakkhana Sutta? Your meditation does not belong to you. No more does your body belong to you. Your feelings don't belong to you. Your emotions don't belong to you. They go according to cause and effect. If you try and control them and make them this way and that way, you'll only lead to frustration. powerful teaching. Basically, everything is out of control. Even the controller is out of control. So there's nothing you can do. So stop trying to do things. Stop trying to make the practice work. Stop trying to have all these goals and achievements. Only how many days of the retreat left? How many people know how many days are left? There's no end of the retreat. That's just all sort of stupid perceptions. There's no sort of tomorrow and yesterday. Just stupid perceptions. The only time you ever have is now. So you don't even worry about how many days are left. And you don't have attainments to gain, which is all sending your mind off into the future. That's an asava, an outflowing of the mind. You can see it work. The mind has this idea of jhanas, because Ajahn Brahm has been writing all his books upon jhanas, and your mind goes out there, yep, that's what I want. And you think, okay, well, you know, in the world, I've had the family stuff, I've had husbands, wives, kids, and I've had the money, I've done that, and so this is the next thing I want, jhanas. Or the next thing I want, sort of, stream winning. You will never get enlightened that way, you'll never get jhana that way. By wanting it, by sending your mind out into the future, into some idea or attainment, and thinking that you're going to get something that way. You just get frustration. You find you meditate day after day, week after week, year after year, and say, why doesn't it work? Please listen why it doesn't work. You're sending your mind out. It's an asava, it's an outflowing of the mind. The opposite of outflowing of the mind, keep your mind inside, keep it home, don't send it out into the world. Don't send it into the past, don't send it into the future, don't send it into things which you know nothing about. Stay at home, stay with this moment, peace, having no outflowings. Understanding that these things are all coming from the stupid delusion of self, which has to do something, which has to choose, which has to make, which has to see, hear, smell, smell, taste, touch, or to know something to exist, to survive. And when you cut off the nutriments of this stupid idea of self, in other words, you don't do anything, you stay still, you don't send the mind out, the world as you know it starts to fade away and disappear. When they say that these monks' minds were freed through anupadaya, yeah, you can say it's through not attaching. But remember with that attaching business, because some monks were mentioning that a day or two ago, attachment. Too often when we talk about attachment, we only think of the things we're attached to. We think of the objects of attachment, whether we're attached to coffee or to fish and chips or to salmon or to noodles, to girls, to boys, to movies, to going here, to going there. That is not the problem, what you're attached to. The main thing you should really put a lot of investigation in is what is doing the attaching. In that book, Mindfulness, Bliss and Beyond, I made the point that attaching has got two ends to it. Like an arm which reaches out to something. You only think what you're picking up. But what's doing the picking up? What's this side of the arm? And this is actually where you start to see this stupid sense of self. It's me who wants to do things, control things, make things, and own and possess things. Is that great saying of the Buddha, when there is a sense of self, there is the idea of things which belong to the self. When there are things which belong to the self, you know there's a self in there somewhere. So you ask yourself, what do you own? What do you think you possess? What are you attached to? An attachment is a link between two things. This idea of a sense of self and some sort of object. But this idea of self, that's where you cut attachment. You can keep on putting down things, letting go of this and letting go of that. You see that in monastic life. I've been in this 34 years as a monk now, so you see what happens in monastic life. So many monks come in, so many nuns go through the system. And you see what happens when a person becomes a monk, they let go of their wealth, their family, great or small, they let go of sex, and then what do they get into? They get into food. So they let go of one attachment, they get another attachment, you know, noodles or whatever. And even if you get rid of food and you go on fast, what do you do then? You get into the coffee or the sweets or whatever else. And then you let go of the sweets, and then what do you get into? You know, telling jokes or hanging around each other. Then you get let go of that. Then what do you get into? You might get into fantasies, you get attached to that. You let go of the fantasies, and what do? This mind is so sticky, it will put down one thing and pick up another thing. And a lot of you will do that for the whole of your life. Some of you decide to let go of the big things and now you want to pick up jhanas. It's exactly the same process. You've let go of many things and now you're picking up something else. Some which, you know, you sort of have an idea of, but you don't really know what you're doing. You haven't got those jhanas. You just heard about them. Bliss better than sex. Yeah, that's what I want to attach to now. That's what I want to get. So the hand of your mind reaches out and tries to grab things. That's the asavas again. So the job of a person who wants to go for enlightenment, it's not about picking up more things. It's about letting go of things. Picking up as least things as possible. And putting your awareness and mindfulness, investigating what does this attaching. What is this thing inside which always wants? When you start to look at that, it's a hard thing to look at first. First of all, you've got to weaken the defenses of the sense of self so you can have a look at it. It's got all these defenses around it, and it's the job of keeping your precepts, because the precepts restrict what you can do. You can't just go to movies, you can't just go and have sex, you can't even go in the kitchen in the afternoon and eat what you like. So many things you can't do. But what that does, that weakens some of the defenses of the illusion of self. And then you start practicing sort of mindfulness and sense restraint. It's not nice having to be mindful. It's just a burden, a drag. I've always got to be mindful, you know, watch how I'm wearing my robe and watch how I'm eating and picking up my spoon and all that sort of stuff. That's a drag. What do I have to do that for? You do that because it is burdensome. Because it just goes against the stream of craving. Because it weakens the sense of self. That's what I said last week when I made that determination. I won't decide to go anywhere unless I'm told. That weakened my sense of self, the sense of control. Even though sometimes I just wanted to go off and meditate. But you know, the abbot would ask you to do something, so you just do it. That weakened my sense of self. And because I did that, my self got very weak. Because it got very weak, it became much easier to meditate. Because what is meditating? It's letting go. Letting go of what? Letting go of this controller. Letting go of where this controller comes from, the sense of self. So by practicing your precepts, and by practicing as best you possibly can, not arguing with them, but just, okay, this is a training to lessen my sense of control, my sense of individuality, my sense of being special, my sense of ego and self. So you start to disappear more and more by keeping precepts. By mindfulness, sense restraint, meditation, you're weakening that sense of self even more. Because the mind isn't going out, you're starving the delusion of self. And the more you do that, the more you starve the delusion of self, the weaker it gets. By weaker, how do you know the sense of self gets weaker? You know it's getting weaker when you want less. When you sort of, you don't really care about sort of what you eat so much or what you drink, and if you get coffee you don't get coffee, or what robes you wear or where you go or what happens. You know, you're someone who has less sense of control. You just flow along with things. You become a monk of few desires. Apicata or apicata. A monk who just desires little. Or rather, who has little desires, few desires left. That really is a sign that the sense of self is being weakened. Because that's what causes those desires to come up. That's where it sources. The me who wants things, who wants to do things, who wants to control things, who wants to say, here I am, I'm different. That's why we all wear the same robes. That's why we all shave our eyebrows, our hair on the same day. We don't stand out. We don't have fashions. You can see what we're doing here. The sense of self is vanishing more and more and more. And that means that when the sense of self vanishes, because its fuel, its causes, its nutriment, the doer, the sense of self, wanting to be different, is being restricted. You find when the sense of self starts to become weak, it cannot want very much. That arm just cannot reach out like it used to. It's weak, it's getting old, it's withering. So you find you do attach to less. You do not go craving for more. This is a gradual process, a weakening of the sense of self. When you restrain it, it gets weaker. When it gets weaker, it attaches to less, it's easier to restrain. And this whole process keeps going like a snowball effect, gets bigger and bigger and bigger as you roll it down the hill, until the sense of self gets so weak that you can let it go temporarily into a jhana. These jhana states, the deep meditations, they are stages of letting go of attachments. Letting go, weakening the sense of self, until there's hardly any self left in these little spaces in samsara, these little holes in the flow of existence called jhanas. Actually, the holes in existence, that's what Venerable Ananda called them, the okasas, the spaces, I think in the Anguttara Nikaya. Panchala Nanda Sutta in the Anguttaras. But these are little spaces in samsara, like holes in the fabric of existence, like wormholes which take you out of samsara to nirvana, these little jhanas. But these are places of emptiness. And what anyone who's experienced these states will know, that one of the main things which is missing there is this sense of self and the doer and the maker and the controller. And this is almost like a little window. You see, like jumping over the wall so you can see what's on the other side. You can see the Dhamma in the sense of Dhamma of emptiness, of freedom, of a non-self, of a non-doer, a non-craving. But to be able to do this, or rather to be able to impart this experience, is perhaps my main goal as a teacher. Not to build a monastery, not to have lots of lay disciples, not to build retreat centres. This is only subsidiary goals. And the main goal is to get a person to actually to see, you know, that emptiness of the self. Well, it is just a process. There's nothing there. See that just for the first time. I call it like jumping up above the wall. Just once, to see what's on the other side. Just once is enough. And then later on, you can climb over that wall with ease. But the first glimpse of nirvana, the first glimpse of non-self, the first glimpse of nothingness, just want, that is all that I really want to give you. If you can do that, you understand that why the practice is this way, why we do have solitude, where there's nothing to do in your hut, why we do try and keep the life simple, why we do have rules of conduct, while we do have sense restraint, while we do have meditation, walking and sitting with nothing much to do. We do this to weaken the sense of self. When the other meaning of upadana, as you know, is the fuel, is this doing actually fuels the self, and the self fuels the doing. Like many of these cause and effect connections in Dhamma, these two again twirl around themselves, one causing the other. When there's a sense of self, we want to do things. When we want to do things, that actually strengthens the sense of self. All going around together.
And the Buddha saw this incredible path of restraint. Mostly restraint of the doer. To actually to weaken the sense of self, which makes it easier to let go of doing, which makes the sense of self even more thin. And that means we can let go even more. This whole cycle of upadana, of wanting things, craving, reaching out for things, and that strengthens the person doing the reaching out. And little by little we do this, letting go, restraining, having few desires, few wishes, going against the stream of craving. And it's by that practice, by weakening the sense of self, by stopping its fuel source, that we can get closer and closer to see the sense of self. And eventually just to poke through it and to see there's nothing underneath. Which is why Sila Samadhi Panya is a way to overcome this idea of me and mine. And of course you know what happens next, once that is seen, once you become a stream winner, there's no way you can sort of keep in samsara anymore. You can see there's no one in here. Why stay around? This is a big experience which makes you an Arya. And it's, you read it in the suttas, but how is it done? You can't become an Arya, you can't become a stream winner, you can't penetrate the Dhamma just by thinking about it or by wanting it. Thinking about it, wanting it, just again strengthens a sense of self. You have to weaken it, go to the cause of this problem, the sense of me and mine, an I, an ego. Get to the source of the problem. And the only way of doing that is weaken it long enough to see there's nothing there. So the upadanas, the attachments which you have, you get the coarse attachments, you know, which most of you just are willing to let go of, because if you hadn't let go of these things, you wouldn't be in a monastery now. The coarse stuff, you've done that, basically. Okay, you know, you still maybe think about sex, or you may think about possessions, but you know, everyone in this monastery, even the visitors, you know, you've just let go of so much already. And, you know, you deserve the alms food you get every day here, even though you may not think you do, by how much you've let go. But you just want to make you let go a little bit more. Let go that extra bit. So you're letting go of the finer attachments. You see those finer attachments. You know, the attachment to sort of expectations and wanting things. It's not so much the worldly possessions, because most of you have given up a lot of worldly possessions. Yeah, you still have too much stuff in your hut. You know, you all know that. Just if ever you want to move, you know the rule here, you've got to carry everything with you. You can't get the tractor, you can't get a car. Even I'm getting a bit too soft to actually allow you to move your material possessions in a wheelbarrow. Really, you should carry it. With no wheelbarrow, no wheels, but just carry everything if you want to move a hut. Could you do that? Can you do that in just, you know, an hour? Are you really like, as it says in the suttas, like a monk who has robes to cover their body, a bowl to feed their stomach, and wherever they go like a bird, with only the weight of its wings to burden it? How many possessions have you got? Can you lessen them? Material possessions are easy to give up, relatively, but it's those spiritual possessions, they're the ones which are much harder. See if you can let go of your spiritual materialism, how much you know, how expert you are, how much meditation you've got. At this end of this retreat, are you going to go up to your friends and ask, how did you meditate? And they say, wow, I just managed to get the beautiful breath. Beautiful breath, and you've been a monk for so long. You know, I've got jhanas, I've got nimittas, I've got this and that. That's called spiritual materialism. Which is one of the reasons why the Buddha said, monks, do not announce your attainments to people who aren't monks. And I would say, don't even announce them to other people who aren't your teacher.
Just keep it quiet. Tell your teacher if you wish to, but no one else. So your attainments don't become another fuel for your sense of self. But you can see whenever you want to sort of let go, what are the obstacles? Why is it you don't want to meditate so much? Why? It's not always a sense of self stops you meditating. Sense of wanting to possess and control things. Even all the things which you do, your jobs and tasks. Ask yourself, why do I do so much? Little duties and tasks. Is it because this is what's asked of me? Or is it because of an attachment to something? An attachment to me? Not wanting to let go. Whenever fear comes up in your life, let alone your meditation, fear is always a sign that you are challenging attachments. If you had nothing, you were nothing. If you realized the Dhamma, you would have no fear. You got nothing to lose. There's no one in here. That's why a sign of an arahat is someone without fear. There's nothing in there, nothing to lose. They die, so what? Pain is only Vedana arising, Vedana passing away. Big deal. It's the fear which is a sign that you are challenging attachments, which is why in the monastic life fear is a good sign. It's a sign that you are penetrating deeply. So when fear comes up in your monastic life, don't just run away from it. Turn around and face it. Face the ghost rather than running away from it. When you face it, you don't just face it just standing your ground just out of more ego. I'm stronger than the ghost. I'm bigger than my fear. You stand your ground to investigate. What am I afraid of? What am I about to lose? And when you look at it that way, the fear can very easily be seen as a teaching device, a signal for you to actually understand the attachments which feed the sense of self and which stop you getting close to the sense of self to get the stream winning, which also stop you letting go to get into deep meditation. Any time there's fear coming up, that's a place where you're going to get insight. If you stay there and get to know it and ask yourself, what am I afraid to lose? As you stay there, you find that what you were afraid of losing was actually a wonderful thing to abandon. It's as if you now see this thing which you possessed as being something which is a burden, a sore, an ulcer, a dart, as it says in the suttas. Possessions which you were cherishing, but once you see them clearly, it's just, why on earth am I carrying that thing around with me? Whenever you get to that place of fear, it's an attachment. If you can use your insight, see clearly, go beyond, you'll find not only does the fear disappear, but you get this great understanding of what attachments truly are. Not the big ones that attach to sex or coffee. They're just so simple and superficial. You get the deep ones, the ones which really are the barrier between you and jhanas, the one which is the barrier between you and enlightenment, especially stream winning. Those are the attachments which are the juicy ones. And sometimes it's fear which shows you that, yeah, you're on the playing field now. You're on the battleground. Stand your ground. Don't fight. Understand. Penetrate. Transcend. Get to the other side of the fear. You've lost something. Wonderful. Usually, the whole process which I'm describing is usually followed by a huge sense of bliss and relief once you go beyond the fear to the other side of your attachment. You realize that for many lifetimes, these are attachments which have always been blocking you from wisdom, from seeing, from freedom, from bliss, from contentment, from stillness, from enlightenment. These are the barriers. This is what you're supposed to be doing. This is not going for what you think is jhanas, what you think is meditation. This is actually what actually happens.
when you let go. You come to these barriers, these attachments, these defences, this ring of defensive lines around the citadel of the illusion of self. And as you come to these, you've got to overcome them one by one. As you come to these, you face them, afraid. Why? What am I afraid to lose? Make use of all the Dhamma you've read, you've translated, you've learned, you've heard. Sometimes that's what you have to do. Just remember, the Buddha said there's no one inside here. All this rupa, this body, the feelings, perceptions, mental formations, including will consciousness, it's not me, not mine, not a self. What am I afraid to lose? At least go by faith, if not by wisdom. And just let go. Allow the process to take you past that barrier of fear. And once you're on the other side, then you know, I've let go of something. I've let go of an attachment, a controlling, an interest. As you do this, obviously you see one of the biggest of those attachments is attachments to your own physical body. It's really a surprise. In this age of science, where you can get these little dolls which the monks had the other day from Body Works, which show exactly what a body is. You can go to autopsies, you can get the books out to see what it's like inside your own body. You can do 31 parts of the body, you can actually know the molecular biology of this thing. You can see people dying, but still, you're attached to the body. Why are you attached to the body? Because you think it's yours. How do you know you're attached to the body? Because you can't let it go and get into a jhana. The body, with its five senses, one day you'll have to drop it when you die. How about dying now? Sometimes that's what it's like when you meditate. You come to these states, you think you're dying. Good riddance, off you go. If you do die, remember, we'll just chant for you the next Wednesday afternoon, evening afterwards. Big deal. So being able to let go of your body and its five senses. Why can't you do that? I used to sometimes contemplate, you know, when you were meditating in these noisy forests, why can't I just, you know, close my ears like I close my eyes? And close your eyes and just try not to see things. And after a short while, you can't see anything. Why can't I do that with my ears as well? Why can't I just shut down my body senses so I can't feel my aching legs on my back? Why can't I do that? What was the barrier there? And you saw that the barrier was that your attachment to those senses and your attachment to your body. There was a link there. I just could not let it go. People were talking. What were they talking about? It was completely none of my business. Why could I just not listen? It took a long while to see why and to understand why Ajahn Chah said, it's not the noise disturbs you. You, yourself, your illusion, that's what grabs onto the noise, goes out looking for it. So that even when I meditated, you're meditating there quite peacefully and you get an ache in the knee. And I thought, damn body, why are you always just disturbing me? Now I know, you've seen it so many times, my knee never disturbs me. I, restlessness goes out looking for something to do. Some problem to pick up. Something which my ego, my sense of self can grab onto and exist with. So now, when you know that all these distractions of the body, of sound, all coming from the sense of self, playing around. Playing with your body, because it's attached to it. If you can just let it go, leave it alone, allow it to disappear. That's a fearful thing to do. Even I remember just some person in Singapore, when they started meditating and their hands disappeared, and they came up to me terrified. Ah, what's going on? My hands, I couldn't feel them. I think, oh, come on, there's many more things to disappear yet. Don't stop on that one. You're only getting started. Let the whole body disappear, and your mind as well. Now that you're really getting somewhere now. This is going to be terrifying. If you're terrified of this stuff, what's going to happen when you start to get into the real letting goes? But anyway, you could see that they were so attached to their body, they couldn't just do it. But it happened, and encouraged it, let it go a bit more, let go a bit more. Often I say that when you do let go of attachment, you go past that fear, how do you feel? I feel really good, feel peaceful, feel profound. And sometimes that whole process of facing an attachment, going through it, going past the fear, and understanding that on the other side is always peace, freedom, bliss. Noticing that connection there with letting go and bliss can be a powerful motivator. You let go because it's fun to let go. You overcome attachments because, wow, this is neat. As you go on that path, the attachments will fall one by one. The attachment to the body, you can let it go. You sit down, you're tired, you're sick, you're aching. What the hell? Nothing to do with me, not my business. You can actually do that. Not actually, I'm very careful the way you have to speak. You don't do it, but it can happen. You just turn a switch. The switch of letting go, and the body disappears. That can happen because you see the body doesn't belong to you. The attachment, the link has been severed so that you can just drop it whenever you want. Imagine you could do that. It means you can just let go of this body with its aches and pains whenever you need to. You can die without any problem. You can meditate with aches and pains. In other words, you just drop it. As simple as that. This is our task. And how do we do that? We don't do that by force, by will, because it's the will creates that attachment. It's the will which creates a sense of self. We have to do it another way. By being still, being content, being peaceful. Owning less, controlling less, till the body completely vanishes. We allow our sense of control to vanish, the will, the doer. After a while, one stops choosing, one stops making, one stops building, one stops agitating the world. This thing inside of us, the will. Why does this happen? Why are we so attached to making things happen, by organizing things? It's all because of this, we think we are the doer. Why is it we want to come, we want to leave, we want to go here and do this? It's just a pain having to move. All because this doer keeps on making us move. I was just reading a couple of days ago a little article which I wrote for this little magazine about, you know, the prisoner in the cell. And the guard, the main torture of the cell, was called Will, always telling this poor prisoner what to do. Such a shame that the prisoner always gets pushed and pulled by this will and thinks the will is a friend. You just have to look at the teachings of the Buddha to see that Chaitanya is suffering. Chaitanya is a burden. Chaitanya is the will, the choice, the decision making. It's such a hard thing to accept that. People think, oh, just Ajahn Brahm just wants to control us by letting us sublimate our will to his will. It's not my will, it's Buddha's will, Ajahn Chah's will, as I've mentioned many times before. But you don't have a strong will. You weaken the will. We all have to do that. Until just the will becomes so weak that we can just turn it off whenever we want. We just don't do anything. Imagine you could do that. You can just sit in your hut and just turn off the will. Like turning a switch.
So it means you can't do anything. You don't do anything. You are still. When I made that connection, or that definition of samadhi as stillness rather than concentration, you can understand why samadhi is the enemy of will. It's the opposite of doing things. It's doing nothing, being still. Not a mind which is agitated, but a mind which, because nothing is happening, gets perfectly peaceful. And because it's perfectly peaceful, it stays there for a long time. It's one-pointed both in the object and also in time. It persists for long periods of time without any agitation, without any movement. Why? Because the will has been abandoned. That's one of the great attachments which we have. And many of you, those of you getting into deep meditation, you should be able to notice that by now. You get a nimitta, you just cannot let it go. You cannot stop it moving around. Why? It's not the nimitta's fault, it's you, the will, the doer, the controller. Just cannot just stop and allow the jhana to happen. Which is why that this is one of the great attachments, one of the most profound of attachments. One of the things which feeds a sense of self more than anything else, this doer. How is that attachment overcome? This is one of the most amazing things. How that last attachment of a doer, it's not the last attachment, one of the deepest ones. How is that attachment of a doer overcome? How do you actually let go? Faith helps. Inspiration helps. How much you've let go in the past helps. You've let go so much already and it's really nice and deep and blissful and beautiful. Why not just go the whole way? The next stage. That sometimes helps. But really what helps most of all is just the sheer fun of it. The bliss of letting go. That bliss, not just the same as sensory pleasure, but the bliss of freedom, of release, of escape from suffering. That profound bliss, which every now and again we can touch, or many people say the spiritual experiences, the lofty states of mind which are otherworldly. They're often mentioned, and this is actually experiential. It's if you're right there, you know, with a deep state of meditation, but you still can't let go to get that extra step. You can actually see what's on the other side there. You can see the bliss, the beauty, the freedom, the profundity of it. You can see it over there, but you're just separated by this stupid will in its most refined form of controlling. Yeah, sure, it wants amazing things. The object is quite wholesome. But because you're wanting it, you're perverting it. And it won't reach it. There's this big barrier, this attachment to the doer. And even though you know that to make that step, you're going to have to let go of something which is so dear, so cherished, your ability to choose and to do and to make and to have. It's just too nice. You take that step. Courageous, that's what virya means, that courageous energy. The ability to lay down your life like a hero. Only it's more than your life. To lay down your soul, your ego, all your delusions, everything you ever own, the deepest things. To be able to lay that all down and just take the step. And that's what happens. You get drawn in. You've let go of the sense of self made by the ego. You bliss out. But it's not just for the sake of bliss. Bliss is the carrot and it's also the reward. And you come out afterwards. Why? What happened there? How do you get there? You let go of will. You let go of the doer. You let go of the controller. You let go of aspirations, expectations, everything. When you let go of the doer, you let go of a huge part of the ego, the sense of self. When you realize how beautiful and how profound that is, and you know it can be done, of course that weakens the attachments enormously.
Number one, you know it can be done, and you've done it. And number two, you know what it's like to have no will, no doer. Experiences like that, they not only weaken what remains of the sense of self, sometimes they fatally wound it. You've seen what it's like over the other side of the wall. No body, no five senses, no will, no doing, no chaitanya, nothing to move. The mind cannot go out. The arsenals, the outflowings, nothing to push them out anymore. You're inside in a place which is immune from the outflowings. If you stay there long enough, you just go deeper into the jhanas. It's natural. You don't choose to go deeper. Happens because this is nature. Your doer, your controller, long gone by the time you get into the jhanas. Come out afterwards. Amazing, this thing you thought was in control. This doer, this will, this thing which was one of the deepest attachments, you can let go of now. Because you can let go of it, your sense of self is very, very much depleted. You don't deserve it. No one deserves anything. It's not there. There's no person in there to hang a medal on. There's not a person in there to hang blame on. There's no places to put badges of attainments on anymore. You can't think your way through this. You can't just imagine this with your intellect. These have to be experienced. I know many Westerners, they can get through these great teachings and they can start thinking and intellectualizing about them and get into great arguments over coffee tables. And it's so different than the experience. So we have to just let go so much that it happens and we know what we're talking about. And know how it works. By letting go of the will, most of the sense of self has disappeared. The only one which remains is the sense of the knower being me. That shouldn't be that hard to overcome. The biggest one is the sense of doer. But we can still be attached to being. To be is to know. To experience. Even though we're not moving, we're still there. That attachment to knowing, to existence, to being, that's the deepest one of all. Well, in the suttas it's called bhava, bhavupadana, bhavasava, bhavadanha, the attachment to existence. Tough one. But after a while we've let go of so much, that final attachment is not that hard to overcome. As we just stay, we're doing nothing. It's a natural process. When there's nothing to move the mind, when nothing is happening, because nothing is moving, when there's a stability of the experience for minute after minute after minute, it develops. It decomposes. So if there's consciousness, when there's no fuel to keep it going, starts to fade away and vanish. When we have this word in Pali, viraga, too often it's translated as dispassion. More often, it's a valid rendition of the word, but I think more often it should be rendered as vanishing, fading away. Because the whole idea of vanishing and fading away, the gradual disappearance of phenomena, is an important description of the experience of the meditator on the path to enlightenment. Things do vanish. All your possessions vanish. Your old habits vanish. But then when you get into the deep meditations, amazing things vanish. The doer vanishes. The body vanishes. But it fades away gradually. You know, watching the breath, rest of things fade away, the hands fade away and all the rest of the body fades away. Maybe your head is the last one to fade away. It's a gradual letting go, a gradual disappearance. As you get into the darkness, then things really begin to fade away. Consciousness itself fades away. To experience that is awesome. This thing, which you're attached to most of all, even more so than the doer, the knower. See that fade away. That is the stuff of enlightenment. I mentioned in those similes in my book, and it's tough to get similes of these deep meditation experiences, but I haven't been able to get a better simile of the lake and the mountains surrounding it. Seeing the waves go up and down for years and years. But then one day looking at that lake and seeing the lake completely vanish. It's going out of existence. Something which had always been there. Something which was so essential to existence, to life, to everything, that you could never imagine it not being there. These are stuff which the mind just, you cannot reach with thinking, with imagination. It's just too weird, too strange. But it's what happens. The knower fades, vanishes. Something solid is now gone. You come out of that afterwards. You get into the deepest meditations, the deeper meditations. The evidence is too strong. The attachment has been weakened to the point of just... The sense of self is just like an old man on its last breath. And it's one kick and it's done with. Just one little insight and it's done. One just little movement of mind, one teaching of the Buddha, one just understanding of what you've experienced and putting in context. The sense of self, who I thought I was for all these lifetimes, now gone. That's what it's like to be a stream winner. That gets consolidated, becomes improved upon, strengthened. Then there's no sense of self left. No doer, just going through the motions. No barrier between you and things like jhanas. Whenever you want to let go, you can turn the switch whenever you want. You can turn off whenever you want. Why? Because the attachments have been overcome. The barriers, the sense of ownership, the sense of control has been overcome. The sense of identification of you being the knower or the doer has been abandoned. When that has happened, all you see is this is five-kanda process coming and going, coming and going. Just as the great nun Wajira said, just dukkha arising and dukkha passing away, that's all there is. Big deal. Dukkha passing away, dukkha arising, dukkha passing away. Why would you want to control that? No, you can't. It's impossible. That's a delusion of life, thinking you're here as a big me who can control and drive your vehicle and control and drive your meditation. When you actually see that, you realize just how stupid you were trying to meditate and having all these attainments and goals you wanted to try and get. And always being frustrated. How many years have you been in this monastery and how many rains retreats have you decided this is the one I'm going to really do it this time? And how many times at the end of the rains retreat, if you were really honest, you say, well, actually all those things I meant to do, I didn't do. If you actually set the goals and wrote them down on a piece of paper beforehand and then gave yourself an honest examination, how many of those goals did you achieve during this rains retreat? How many of you would get more than 2 out of 10? And you wouldn't be able to get 2 out of 10 because the whole nature of the thing is like that. You're not special, you're not a failure. It's the wanting is the problem. So this is actually when we... I keep on pressing on the same point, but this is essential to the Dhamma. It's just the letting go, the abandoning of attachments, so the restraining of the will and the controller and the doer. This whole beautiful, beautiful path Sila Samadhipanya. The straining until we just let go more and more, until we vanish more, until we fade away more and more. Seems to be a weird part of samsara. The more you fade away, the more famous you become. Weird. The less you are of an ego, the more people look up to you as somebody. The highest is an arahat, a saint. But really, there's no one there. Weird that people praise that which vanishes the most. But that's what it's like in this samsaric world. But your job is to get out. How long have you suffered? How much more do you want to suffer? Have you had enough yet? Everyone says, yes, I've had enough. I want to get out. Stop it then. Stop this house builder. Stop this one who wants to meditate. Stop this one who wants to come here and go there. Stop this doer. You come across fear? Great, welcome fear. I'm willing to die. I'm willing to completely vanish. I'm willing to abandon everything. Totally. If you have that degree of courage, then you will not move into the future. You will not linger into the past. Why would you? That all comes from doing, wanting, controlling, blaming and measuring when you go off into the past. Stop it. If you really stop your attachments and craving, you can't move. When you don't move, you become still. When you become still, things fade away. When things fade away, you get emptiness. In emptiness, you can see. There's no obstacles. It's no like mist. No like looking through the... I was just talking with Ajahn Kampong a few days ago. That wasn't Ajahn Kampong. It was Ron Story. That we were talking about the bushfire which we had here in 1991. One of the things after the bushfire, all the leaves and bushes to the ground were burnt to nothing. So you could actually see this whole monastery. You could stand where we are now and see right through to the far hillsides and all the huts. They weren't secluded anymore because there's no bushes to seclude them. It's a wonderful, interesting experience. I wouldn't say wonderful. This is like when the Dhamma is made clear, when all your attachments are burnt out. You can see far. You can see clearly. This is what we need to do. When we vanish more and more, we can see more and more clearly. And the body disappears. When the senses don't give a damn about them, we're not interested in hearing. We're not interested in our body. And that's a deep thing I'm saying. It's not superficial. It vanishes. Jhanas are easy. When the will disappears, so the will has to disappear as well for jhanas to be easy. We don't do it. We don't try for it. We don't try and attain it. It happens when we stop trying. When I say stop trying, it doesn't mean, oh, I'm just going to go and sleep. Oh, I'm just going to go. You're doing something. Please don't try and twist these teachings around to justify indulgence. If you're indulging, you're doing something. If you really are stopping doing things, stopping trying, then you just sit still and nothing moves. That's the sign that you have stopped doing and trying things. That you're still. The things fade away. The sign of letting go is that jhana happens. The sign of going beyond attachment is the sense of self vanishes, and you see that. You know that something big has happened. You understand exactly why it is that samsara, for you, has got a limit now. It can't be that long. When you see through these things, it's like you picked out the, like in a woolen jumper, like these woolen anchors we have. Once you've got one thread loose, the whole thing unravels. There's nothing to hold it together anymore. Samsara is nothing. You can hold samsara together anymore once you've seen through the delusion of self, the doer and the knower, nobody there. Nothing there. The empty process. You've been there, you've seen when it disappears. It's going to unravel. It's only a matter of time. From that perspective, you look back upon all those many lifetimes you've lived thinking you were in control of things, that you were responsible for everything, that you did this and did that and made it so much. You were the house builder. How many houses have you built? How many things have you achieved? How many great edifices are you responsible for? They're all decayed, and you go and make more things. You made a self every time, it's been so strong, and it's suffered so much. Now there's an opportunity, a chance to stop that, to end samsara once and for all. This is how it is done. You have to let go. Not try and attain things. Not send your mind into the future. What I'm going to do next. What I'm going to... A great talk. After I leave here, I'm going to go meditate all night. Don't be stupid like that. I remember many times doing that, being so inspired by a great talk, and going, right, this is it. I'm going to get enlightened tonight. Completely missed the point. It's not tonight, it's now, stupid. I don't send my mind out at all. You keep it in, at home. No arsenals, no outflowings. No attachments, no doing. It's this thing inside which keeps picking up things. That's the enemy. Picking up the next moment, picking up the jhana, picking up enlightenment, picking up travel, picking up so much stuff. I've had enough of that. How do I stop that? I'm not concerned at all what I've got in my hand right now. I'm not really going to let go of what's in my hand. I'm going to let go of my hand. I'm going to let go of the muscles, the ligaments, whatever else it is, which connects the hands to the brain. I'm going to let go of that thing which keeps on firing the neurons in my brain. I'm going to let go of the doer. Just Mr. Big. You know, the one behind the syndicate of suffering. That's what I'm going to start. When you get the head of the snake and you catch that, you never get bitten. The doer is the head of the snake. Catch that and you never get bitten again. And you can destroy this snake once and for all. You are that snake. This is how we practice. Hopefully, one moment, one time, that you will see through that, kick the snake to death, or rather just seeing the snake dies, and you too can be free, and realize why the Buddha taught the Dhamma, realize why we have rains retreats, why we have monasteries, why we have Dhamma talks, why we're here, so we can get out and disappear and fade away. That's what we mean by abandoning all attachments. That's a talk tonight.
Bhagavato Sāvaka Sangho Sangham Namo.